Hello, this is Miss Dell with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, June 8th, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Parties Celebrate Route 66 Decades. From the roaring 20s up through the groovy 60s and to the rocking 80s, McLean County Route 66 communities spent the weekend celebrating 100 years of the Mother Road. Seven towns threw seven parties over the course of 2 days as part of Cruisin' Through the Century, with each community from north to south having its own time and decade to honor from when Route 66 was first laid out in the 1920s through its decommissioning in the 1980s. We've heard from a lot of folks who were very, very positive about it. Really excited about the differences in the communities, said Zach Dietmeyer, Chief Operating Officer for Visit BN, the Bloomington Normal Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. You get to experience each and every community along Route 66 in McLean County, and you get a different vibe to it all. So there's something for everybody today. Jeff Stempora, rider with the McLean County Wheelers, a recreational bicycling club. The parties started with the 1920s on Saturday in Chenoa and ended Sunday with the 1980s in McLean. Rounding out the decades were Lexington with the 1930s and Towanda in the 1940s on Saturday, Normal celebrating the 1950s on Sunday, Bloomington holding Saturdays on the Square in the 1960s, and Shirley Funk's Grove ringing in the 1970s on Sunday. Chenoa featured a barbershop quartet. Lexington had a big band music, to which Larry and Shirley Hackman danced, and Towanda had a swing band on Saturday. But the night culminated in Bloomington with a performance by Motown Nation and a special light show celebrating Route 66 cast upon the McLean County Museum of History. Sunday picked up where the night left off with a roadside picnic in Normal, followed by tie-dye-themed activities on Funk's Grove property, and ending with a Village Square celebration and classic car parade in McLean. Some, like Hopedale's Julie Burke, prepared for each decade. I have a different outfit for every decade, she said, playing mini-golf in Lexington. I'm going all out. After this, I'm going dressed up as the 40s before we go to Towanda. Her husband, Chris, enjoyed seeing American engineering change through the decades with all the car shows, he said. It's been a lot of fun seeing the different sights and that and the way the towns kind of decorate everything, he said. The McLean County Wheelers, a recreational bicycling club, had two groups time-traveling along the Mother Road, said Jeff Stempora. He was setting the pace for the faster riders on Saturday. It's all about the history, especially today, Stempora said, enjoying a pulled pork sandwich in Lexington. You see the old cars, the old signs, the road signs, the tourist attractions. They were especially excited for the stretch of old Route 66 in Towanda, known as Dead Man's Curve, he said, but they planned on keeping it to a rather safe speed through the sharp curve. I limit these guys to 17 miles per hour. We don't want them going faster, Stempora said. Staying in Lexington, Ben Walters enjoyed a trip down memory lane with a root beer float. When I was a kid, we used to go to the A&W stand, he said, and back in the old days, there would be somebody who would come out and take your order in our car. And a root beer float was the natural thing to get at the A&W root beer stand, along with a Coney dog and French fries. The journey gave them a chance to experience a slice of Americana they had not known, said Sue Walters. We can live part of that history that our parents always talked about, she said. Our next front page article, look at Iran's nuclear facilities. The U.S. is lobbying other countries on the UN Nuclear Watchdog's Board of Governors to support a draft resolution demanding that Iran tell the agency what happened to its bombed nuclear sites and the enriched uranium stored there. The U.S. drafted text, seen by Reuters on Sunday and circulated ahead of this week's quarterly meeting of the 35-nation board, risks complicating talks between Washington and Tehran. Iran has typically retaliated against resolutions against it at the International Atomic Energy Agency, escalating its nuclear activities or scaling back cooperation. Previous IAEA board resolutions on Iran, submitted by the U.S., Britain, France, and Germany, have passed by wide margins. One, adopted in November, demanded that Iran inform the agency without delay about the status of its enriched uranium stock and damaged sites, something that has yet to happen. The U.S. draft says Iran must provide the agency with precise information on nuclear material accountancy and safeguard nuclear facilities in Iran and grant all access it requires to verify this information. Both steps are described as essential and urgent and must be taken without delay. The text stops short of referring Iran to the UN Security Council, a move some diplomats said was under consideration. That would have followed up on a June 12, 2025 resolution declaring Iran in breach of its non-proliferation obligations. Israel began bombing Iran's nuclear sites a day later. The U.S. mission to the IAEA declined to comment. Current U.S.-Iran talks aim to extend their ceasefire and pave the way for broader negotiations, including on Iran's nuclear program. U.S. President Donald Trump has said his goal is to ensure Iran cannot develop nuclear weapons, something Iran denies seeking. Meanwhile, the Israeli military said Sunday it struck Iran-backed Hezbollah infrastructure in the Lebanese capital's southern suburbs after the Lebanese armed group fired at northern Israel, prompting fears of a new escalation in the three-month-old war. Apart from two strikes last month, Israel halted its bombardment of Beirut's southern suburbs after a ceasefire announced by the U.S. on April 16th. The truce has not halted fighting between Israel and Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. In a joint statement with his defense minister, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, "The strike on the suburbs, known as Dayieh, was ordered in response to Hezbollah's firing toward Israeli territory." Lebanese state media reported 2 dead and 11 injured in an initial toll. Reuters could not independently confirm what was hit or whether the dead were members of Hezbollah. Lebanese security sources said people who returned to Dayieh in recent weeks were now fleeing again, fearing a new escalation would see the area hit heavily. Israel's military also issued an evacuation warning to the residents of the southern Lebanese city of Tyre and its surrounding areas on Sunday ahead of possible strikes. Iran has made a ceasefire in Lebanon between its close ally and Israel, a condition for the peace deal with the United States. Tehran also threatened to retaliate if Israel strikes the Lebanese capital. The U.S. said it wants to keep discussions on a ceasefire in Lebanon separate from its talks with Iran. Last week, Washington announced another ceasefire framework following talks between Israel and Lebanon, but Hezbollah rejected the U.S. proposal. The Iran-backed group says Israel must halt its attacks and withdraw its forces from southern Lebanon. Hezbollah entered the war March 2nd, saying it was retaliating for the killing of Iran's supreme leader at the start of a conflict that has since killed thousands in Lebanon and displaced more than 1 million people. Also on Sunday, Trump said in an interview with NBC News Meet the Press that he would not unfreeze Iranian assets or lift sanctions before a peace deal is reached. Trump said he would consider these steps after agreement is done. Comes after, he said. Yeah, if they behave, if they do a good job, we start talking. Yeah. Trump also said he was not demanding that Lebanon be a part of the short-term deal with Tehran. I think they'd like to see it, but I'm not demanding, Trump said in the interview recorded Friday. U.S. and Israeli forces began strikes on Iran on February 28th. The Trump administration has been trying to negotiate a potential peace deal for weeks. We're very close to a deal, or I'm going to blow the hell out of them, Trump told NBC News. The president also said he would be willing to speak with Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Mojaba Khamenei, who has not been seen in public since being wounded in U.S. strikes at the beginning of the conflict. I don't want to say whether or not I know where he is, but there's a good probability that I do, Trump said. Top Trump administration officials said the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, insist on temporary ceasefire agreement is holding up despite recent U.S. strikes on Iran, telling lawmakers last week those were defensive actions. Our last front page article, measles whooping cough up, vaccination rates down. Vaccine hesitancy fed by misinformation is causing new surges of measles and whooping cough while COVID-19 hotspots persist in some states and a new threat looms from an Ebola outbreak in Central Africa. Nationally, there have been 1,983 measles cases this year, nearly the 2,288 total for all of 2025, which in itself was the worst year since 1991, the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported May 29th. Halfway through the year, 12 states and the District of Columbia already have more measles cases than they did for a full year in 2025. That's true for South Carolina and Utah, where cases are already more than double last year, and also for states such as Florida, which has 139 cases so far, compared with 8 in 2025, and Virginia, which already has 63, compared with 6 in all of 2025. South Carolina, the state with the highest number of cases this year, at 669, declared an end in April to an outbreak that was the nation's largest in 35 years. The outbreak in the northwestern part of the state was centered in Spartanburg County, where religious exemptions to vaccination have spiked. The Utah outbreak, which began in the Short Creek area on the Utah-Arizona border, where vaccination rates are low, has generated 484 cases this year and is now slowing, said Dr. Andrew Pavia, a pediatrician and professor at the University of Utah, speaking at a May 26 briefing for the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Dozens of measles patients were hospitalized with serious symptoms such as brain inflammation or pneumonia, he said, and one baby developed life-threatening congenital measles during pregnancy but survived, he said. The national increases signal that the U.S. will certainly lose the measles elimination status it gained in 2000, Pavia said, in a determination due this fall. Most state public health departments are stretched very, very thin, limiting their ability to contain measles. Anti-vaccine rhetoric has made this all the more difficult, Pavia said. He referred to $11 billion in federal funding cuts to local public health last year that were delayed by a restraining order when states sued. The case is in settlement negotiations, according to court records. The Trump administration cited a non-existent pandemic that Americans moved on from years ago in the funding cuts, but COVID-19 is still causing more than 1,000 deaths a month, and wastewater surveillance still shows hotspots in the Appalachian region and some other states, including Michigan. Whooping cough is also on the rise, with Ohio and Florida most affected. Deaths last year were at the highest level, 22, since 2010, according to the latest CDC Wonder Provisional Statistics. The rising number of deaths from whooping cough, including among infants, is a reminder of the vital importance of vaccination, said Dr. Joshua Svarstein, a pediatrician and professor at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, who follows whooping cough trends. Families who follow public health guidance on vaccination and other precautions can avoid a needless tragedy, Scharfstein said. Louisiana was accused of unusual delays in reporting a whooping cough outbreak last year that claimed at least 2 lives. Shortly after the deaths were reported, the state ended promotion of vaccines and vaccination events. At least 3 babies died in Kentucky last year, along with at least 1 in Oregon. Unvaccinated people are like fuel for the wildfire of disease outbreaks, said Pavia of the University of Utah in his remarks. Until we can restore faith in vaccines and restore funding for our public health agencies and increase measles vaccine coverage, we have to anticipate that there will be many more outbreaks, and some of these may blow up into very large conflagrations, Pavia said. Meanwhile, the Trump administration announced a new quarantine center in Kenya that was to open May 29 for Americans exposed to the Ebola virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The move was criticized by the Infectious Diseases Society of America in a statement, saying that the decision to send exposed Americans to Kenya raises serious questions about resources, timing, and the level of care Americans sent there will receive. On Ebola, a May 22 CDC directive prohibited United States entry of non-citizens who had been in the Democratic Republic of Congo or nearby Uganda or South Sudan in previous 21 days. The disease killed 224 people in that region, and there are more than 900 suspected cases. Our next article, states cut immigrant health care. Budget constraints are forcing states that spend their own money on health care for non-citizens to scale back that aid as they grapple with federal Medicaid cuts and the expiration of federal subsidies that helped people buy Obamacare plans. Under federal law, immigrants who are in the country illegally are not eligible for federally funded health coverage. But as of last month, 6 states, California, Colorado, Illinois, New York, Oregon, and Washington, plus the District of Columbia, were spending state dollars to cover some income-eligible non-citizen adults, regardless of their immigration status. A total of 14 states, plus the district, provide state-funded coverage to non-citizen children, whether they are here legally or not. And 3 states, Colorado, New Jersey, and Vermont, cover pregnant women regardless of their immigration status. In addition, 40 states have taken up options in Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program to provide coverage to lawfully present children and/or pregnant women who are not citizens. But the tax and spending bill President Donald Trump signed into law last summer cuts federal spending on Medicaid, the joint federal-state health insurance program for low-income people. It also places new eligibility restrictions on lawfully present immigrants, including refugees and asylees, who are enrolled in government-subsidized health programs, including Medicaid, CHIP, Medicare, and plans available on the insurance marketplaces created under the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. and Congress at the end of last year did not renew federal subsidies that helped people buy Obamacare plans. With less federal money to provide health benefits, at least five states, California, Colorado, Illinois, Minnesota, and Washington, plus D.C., have scaled back or announced plans to scale back state-funded health benefits for immigrants. Others may have to pull back as budget pressures continue. The federal government shifted much more of the financial burden of providing those services to states, and so states are taking a holistic view at their health care budgets and trying to figure out where they can cut, said Meta Makhlouf, a law professor and founding director of the Medical Legal Partnership Clinic at Penn State Dickinson Law, who studies immigrants' access to health care. Historically and currently, as we're seeing, immigrants are going to be the first to be cut for a variety of reasons. They don't have political power in the same way citizens do. Drishti Pillai, Director of Immigrant Health Policy at KFF, a health policy research group, warned that the state cuts combined with federal changes will likely increase uninsured rates and reduce access to care among immigrants and their children, most of whom are U.S. citizens. Over the long term, these changes could lead to worse health outcomes that could be more complex and expensive to treat, Pillai said. But Cooper Smith, Director of Homeland Security and Immigration at the America First Policy Institute, a conservative think tank that has worked on policy development with current Trump administration, said that when budgets tighten, policymakers should prioritize U.S. citizens. Taxpayers pay into a system, Smith said. I think it's reasonable to expect that those who have paid into the system should be the primary beneficiaries of public benefit. California has traditionally provided some of the most generous benefits, but last June, Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom signed a state budget that barred immigrants who are here illegally from newly enrolling in the state's Medicaid program known as Medi-Cal. In addition, current enrollees between the ages of 19 and 59 will have to pay a $30 monthly premium beginning in July 2027, and this July, the state will eliminate dental care for non-citizens. Newsom's budget for next year proposes scaling back Medi-Cal coverage for some immigrants living in the country lawfully, including an estimated 200,000 asylees, refugees, and others. California Democratic State Senator Maria Elena Durazo is pushing legislation that would undo the enrollment freeze and restore access to full-scope Medi-Cal coverage for adults living in the U.S. illegally. California immigrants are not going to go away, Durazo said. We need them. They're agricultural workers, they're food workers, they're construction workers. We are not going to provide the minimal basic health care coverage and think that somehow it's not going to come back to haunt us through emergency rooms and other counties and public hospitals. Using state money, Colorado's Silver Enhanced Savings Program allows immigrants who are here illegally to buy Obamacare plans with zero premiums, but budget constraints prompted the state to lower the enrollment cap for the program to 6,700 from 12,000. Now the state is poised to downsize another program. Last year, the state launched Cover All Coloradans to provide state-funded health coverage for low-income children and pregnant women who would be eligible for CHIP or Medicaid, if not for their immigration status. But a bill the legislature sent last month to Democratic Governor Jared Polis would scale back some of the benefits available under the program and cap enrollment. The New York Constitution bars the state from distinguishing between citizens and legal immigrants in providing Medicaid, but even New York has had to make changes. Because of federal funding cuts, the state says it's narrowing income eligibility rules for its state-run essential plan, which provides zero premium coverage for people who are here legally but do not qualify for Medicaid. Beginning in July, the program will no longer cover households making between 200% and 250% of the federal poverty level. One more healthcare article. HHS seeks medical records. The Department of Health and Human Services is seeking access to Americans' medical records, but says the initiative isn't directed at looking into the link between vaccines and autism. In a statement to USA Today, an HHS spokesperson shared that the agency is strengthening public health surveillance and modernizing data systems to better understand and combat the childhood chronic disease epidemic as part of Secretary Robert F. Kennedy's Make America Healthy Again agenda. Americans deserve robust systems to monitor the drivers of chronic illness. The statement comes after KFF Health News reported Kennedy, the health secretary, is pursuing these records in a quest to research a link between vaccinations and autism. The World Health Organization and other reputable health agencies around the world have reportedly stated that evidence shows vaccines do not cause autism. Funding for the initiative was already allocated via programs under the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, according to a source with knowledge of the situation, who has not been authorized to speak publicly. The initiative is not evidence of a national patient database or master patient index, the source added. Autism has long been a major topic of interest for Kennedy. He said shortly after his confirmation as health secretary that he planned to find the cause of it by his first September in office. The deadline has since passed, and many scientists and autism activists were immediately skeptical of it anyway, saying it oversimplified a deeply complex issue. Last year, HHS denied it was planning an autism registry after the National Institutes of Health appeared to share plans for one. NIH Director Dr. J. Bhattacharya said the initiative that could create disease registries to research autism in a presentation about his vision for the department at the Council of Councils meeting on April 21, 2025. CBS News reported on April 25th, an HHS official told USA Today it's not creating such a registry. The registries came up as part of an initiative to create real-world data platform that would pull together information from the public and private sectors to support research, an HHS official told USA Today at the time. The official did not respond to clarifying questions about other disease registries or the use of privately held health data. And now the digest. Administration may try to buy Chagos Islands. The White House is considering a plan to buy the Chagos Islands from Mauritius, the Telegraph reported Sunday. U.S. officials have drawn up a proposal to bypass the U.K. and make their own deal to take control of Diego Garcia, the report said. The plan is among several options to drafted by the White House in a paper aimed at providing alternatives to British Prime Minister Keir Starmer's ceding sovereignty of the Indian Ocean archipelago to Mauritius, the report said. President Trump has been consistent in his position that the United Kingdom should not give away the British Indian Ocean territory, which includes our joint U.S.-UK military facility on the Diego Garcia Atoll, a U.S. official told Reuters. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review dated Monday, June 8th, 2026. Please stay tuned.